Alright, so today's topic is looking deeply into dependent origination. Now, can you hear me from the back? Clear? Alright. So dependent origination is a very important teaching in Buddhism. Now, we all know about the story of the Buddha. When the Buddha was a prince, he has a very happy and comfortable life. However, through his observation, he also realized that there are a lot of suffering in life. So he has a happy life himself, but by observing the phenomena around us, he saw how living creatures fight with each other, kill each other to fulfill their own wish. So when he was young, there was once he was sitting under a tree looking at a farmer farming the farm, and he saw that how the farmer works very hard, try to earn a good life, a good living, and he whipped the buffalo to make the buffalo work, and the buffalo dug out the earth, and then there were earthworms, and then you have the bird flew down to eat the earthworms, and then the eagle flew down to eat the smaller bird. So looking at this scene, he was a young boy at that time. He was thinking, everyone likes to be happy. The earthworms like to be happy. The birds like to be happy. The buffalo likes to be happy. The farmer likes to be happy. But why? When the birds like to be happy, it eats the earthworms. Doesn't the earthworms like to be happy too? So everyone in the world likes to be happy. Everyone likes to be peaceful. But at the end, we create a society as what we have today. Everyone fighting with one another. We are all longing for happiness. So we are supposed to work towards our wish and fulfill a wish where we are happy. And we should be living in a world which is happy, since everyone likes to be happy. But why is the world not as peaceful as we hope that it's supposed to be? So what is the cause behind this? So a lot of people think that, yes, I think I'm pretty happy. But in reality, we are not that happy. We may be happy temporarily, but ultimately, the truth is that we have a lot of sense of insecurity in ourselves. We may be happy, we try to earn more money, and everything's running smoothly, but deep in our heart, we have a sense of insecurity. When are we going to lose this? Whatever that I have, am I going to have this forever? And things that we haven't obtained, we work very hard day and night to obtain what we want. So think about the 24 hours that you have every day. We spend every day working very hard. What are we trying to fulfill? How many of the things that we want to fulfill are necessary? Well, how many percent of the things that we want to fulfill are actually, well, you can, even if without them, you won't die. But we spend our life day and night working and working and working. I'm not telling everyone to be lazy, but it's just for you to think. I'm spending all my life trying to work on certain things, a lot of things. How many percent of them are actually necessary? How many percent of them are actually helping me to become wiser? Or are they just fulfilling my comfort? So we sometimes need to stop and ask ourselves. So when the Buddha was a prince, he saw this, and he saw that a lot of people caught themselves in suffering while they wish for happiness. And so he thought, what is the meaning of life then? We wish for happiness, we end up with a lot of suffering, and then at the end we will go through old age and then die. And so we work so hard throughout the year, the life, and then at the end we just go. And then that's it. Is that the meaning of life? So sometimes people who work very hard, and if they do not know the real meaning of life, in the middle of the night, sometimes you think, you have a sense of hollow. What am I working for? Especially when it's probably not to some of you who are still young, if they have a lot of ambition. But when it comes to 50s, 60s, 70s, where you feel that this body is not sustaining you that much anymore, death is coming, and you start to recall, I have spent days and nights trying to earn a better living, now I'm coming to an old age. Now, the money, the career that I have, is it going to support me? I'm going to pass on my career to someone else. So what's the real meaning of life? So when the Buddha was a prince, he thought of all these questions. So he left in the palace in search of the truth, and finally he practiced and attained enlightenment. Now when he attained enlightenment, what did he realize? We say that on the day of his enlightenment, which is usually when we celebrate the Visak day, we say it's the enlightenment day most of the tradition, they say that this is the day of the Buddha's birth, enlightenment, and parinirvana. Now, so when the Buddha attained enlightenment, first we say that according to the sutras that on the first part of the night, he developed his mental power because he practiced with all this contemplation, this thoughts, observation that he had when he was a prince, and he kept on practicing, searching for teachers. Now he has been observing all the phenomena in the world, frustration that people gone through, why is it as such, but he haven't come up with a good answer to it. So he started to practice meditation, focusing his mind. And so on this day, he attained a mind which is calm and focused. The mind became very, very peaceful, and his mental power start to develop. And so it was said that on the first part of the night, he developed the mental power in which he recollect his own past life in detail. What kind of life he had, where did he live, and what kind of occupation he engaged in, his own past life. So when a person's mind is very, very calm and peaceful, very focused, we say it's just like a pond of water which is very peaceful, where everything, all the dirt subside, and then things start to become clearer. So this is not something mysterious. In fact, everyone can develop the mind power as such. So in the first part of the night, he was able to see his own past life. And then he developed his mental power, focus of the mind, further, and he was able to see the past life of others. And it is through seeing the past life of others that he realized that good doer reap happiness, bad doer, people who do evil, reap suffering. So he started to understand there's cause and effect. That if we want happiness, we need to make sure that there are certain actions that we have to cultivate in order to have happiness. So his mind become very subtle and refined, that he see how it works. That he see that these people who do good things reap happiness, people who do bad things, they have bad consequences. And then in the third part of the night, which is just before dawn, his mind became reached the highest point of focus, where he realized that everything is impermanent and it arises dependent on causes and conditions. That everything that comes about in this world, in fact, they are always in the process of changing, and they come together with the depending on a lot of causes and conditions. So suffering is caused by desires and ignorance, and because of ignorance, desires, and so with these actions we've done will lead to suffering. And so he also realized that if someone can practice and eliminate this ignorance and don't cause themselves into unwholesome actions, speech and thoughts, suffering will not arise. So it shows that suffering arises due to causes and conditions as well. Same thing, happiness arises due to causes and conditions. And then same thing, suffering can be ceased according to causes and conditions, as long as we don't supply with the causes and conditions that lead to suffering. So after this realization, he was able to free himself from ignorance and desire. So he realized that not only the from observation, from his realization of how people caught themselves into suffering and how suffering arises due to causes and conditions, and also all phenomena in fact arises due to causes and conditions, there's nothing that a person can cling on. And reflect onto himself as well that this person who is so ignorant and has so much desire, what is this? It is actually causes and conditions as well. So especially when he start to develop this mental this clarity of mind, he was just focusing on all the phenomena, he let go himself, and when he let go yourself, you find that you see things much more clearer. So he start to realize that this self that we are attaching to, they are actually dependent, originated as real. We tend to think of this I as a permanent I. I need to work, I need money, I need food, I need to sleep. It's all about this I. But what is this I? This I is a combination of many causes and conditions. It is dependent, originated. You say your nose is your I? You say your eyes is your eyes. We have a lot of organs that make up this body that we have. You can't say this nose is eye. Even if the nose you put into a microscope, you can see a lot of cells. If it's just the nose, people say this is a monster. It is when things are put in the right place, then you say, oh, this is a handsome boy. But if the parts are put in the wrong place, then we say this person is very ugly or looks like a monster. Right? So, and in fact, what is handsome, beautiful, or what is ugly? It's just that this species born, generally born as with this appearance. So we say, oh, this kind of appearance looks handsome. Maybe if there's a ET, some aliens from outer space, they come and they say, oh, these people look so funny. They look so ugly. Probably just like the dog look at us. What is this? What are these people? Right? So that's and so the definition of handsome, beautiful is basically dependent, originated, and relative as well. The concept is actually not a fixed one. It's basically developed through the upbringing, whatever people have taught you, the culture, and that's it. There's nothing. So next time if anyone say that you're not handsome, don't worry. It's not a fixed there's no fixed definition, or there's no fixed judgment on what is beauty and not beauty. And that's why when we look at artists drawing the abstract drawing, those drawings, if we look at it, oh, what is this? But people who are artistic say, oh, this is fantastic. Okay, alright, just see, so don't get too upset over when someone says you're not beautiful or not handsome. Don't worry. Yeah. So basically everything, so he realized that even this I that we tend to attach to so much arises due to many causes and conditions. Just look at this physical body that we have. So with all these different organs that make up our body, and then plus your nervous systems, your blood vessels, and then they are circulating the blood are circulating every moment, breathing in and breathing out, the cell is rising and falling, the metabolism. So which second are we identical? In fact, every moment we are changing. But because we can't see this truth as such, So, and because the changes are not as fast as that can allow us to see that it's changing every second, so we start to develop a sense of self, that we think that this is a self, and so we gather all this to ourselves, and then think and develop a sense of self-centeredness. And from this sense of self-centeredness, we start to become very protective. So we want to make sure that this self feel comfortable. We want to fulfill the sense organs of this self. So we have a lot of desires for ourselves, to make ourselves comfortable, to make sure that we are better than the others. So we have arrogance, jealousy, and so on. And it all develops from because not knowing the truth of this self. And then plus, not knowing the truth of the external things. The external things are all subject to change as well. See, just like as what we say, handsome, beautiful, they are just a concept which is dependent originated, which do not have a fixed identity in it. But because we cannot understand it healthy, when someone say you are not handsome, and then Ian will feel very very upset. He can't sleep for one whole week, and then he looks so depressed, make him less handsome. So that's what happened to us. So because of not understanding the truth of the external things, we attach to it, and then because not understanding of ourselves, we have this self protection, and so therefore we start to develop wrong approach. We start to develop wrong emotion to things, and then start to attach to it and got ourselves into a lot of unnecessary suffering. So when the Buddha realized the truth, he realized that this self is actually dependent originated. We have wrongly cling on to ourselves, and it is actually not necessary. So when you let go self-centeredness and just understand that it is just causes and conditions that comes together, mm-hmm. and external things, they are causes and conditions as well that just comes together. So he let go his ignorance, he break through ignorance, let go self-attachment and desire, he attained perfect wisdom and enlightenment. So when he attained enlightenment, what he have realized is what we say, the truth of dependent origination, which is the universal law, which is how things exist in this world. But because our mind is not subtle and focused enough, we are unable to see this truth. So in order to help and guide us, the Buddha tried to explain to us the truth of dependent origination using a lot of different ways, so that we can get a bit of understanding on it. But because we habitually we have developed this strong self-centeredness in ourselves for so many lives, you find that it is very easy for us to fall into the trap of I and self again and again. But if we can relate to the teaching of dependent origination more often, don't jump into making judgment by ourselves from our self perspective only, but try to relate to the teaching of dependent origination as much as we can, then you find that it will help you to become a person who will be more peace, who will be more happy, because you wouldn't jump up and down because certain incident happened. You will not just get on impulse because things that you want is not there. You will start to be able to relate to the teachings better, and you will become more flexible in your ways of doing things, because you understand that everything arises due to causes and conditions. So for example, you want to run a project, and then you find that to turn up to the company, certain things are not there, and so you need to have a last minute change, right? So just understand that, okay, things arises due to causes and conditions. So one factor is not there. How can I work with the 9 factors that I have? And we make arrangement, rearrangement, and then we can continue to work. So we have to understand that everything arises due to causes and conditions, and sometimes if the conditions are not what we have what we expect to have, or the conditions that we do not expect to have, it happens, then we will learn to try to, okay, now there's new condition there, what can I do with it? For example, you may have a party and you may not want to invite a certain person, and that person happens to turn up, and you plan to say something which probably not very comfortable for this person to say, so you may then have to adjust your speech then immediately, right? So it's something like this, causes and conditions, right? So all right, so that's basically an introduction on the teaching of dependent origination. So today we want to go into a bit in depth into the teaching of dependent origination. So the definition of dependent origination as stated in the sutra is that when this exists, that comes to be. So that means everything that we see, it doesn't just come by itself. It relies on a lot of things to support and to arise. So it say when this exists, that comes to be. With the arising of this, that arises. When this does not exist, that does not come to be. When the cessation of this, that ceases. So in other words, as what we say just then, if we have suffering, we have desire, ignorance relate to suffering. If we cease suffering, ignorance and desire, then suffering will cease. Alright? So it's because of this, therefore that arises. And even this that we are talking about itself are dependent originated. So when we say this exists, that arises, this did and that itself are also dependent originated. We have to understand that. Alright? So we have to understand that everything arises due to causes and conditions and ceases according to causes and conditions. So this understanding is very profound, and it's not very easy for people to understand, and that's why we always attach to things as like this and that, and this is permanent, that is permanent. Because when we see something, this, then we always think of, this is a thing, and immediately we feel like it lasts forever. So we always have a concept of like these things is permanent, but we didn't realize that every moment is in the process of changing. So in order to explain further to us, there's the Buddha also tell us how to look at the things from a few perspectives. So there's this examples on how the Buddha tell us to look at the dependent origination from 4 perspectives. One is that it is the things is itself from one things that when you move to onto another. Say for example, okay, we look at the Ian's baby photo until he's now, right? You see the baby photo, the baby who is also called Ian, and this Ian, are they the same? Or are they not the same? Are they identical? They're not identical. But you can't say that they are totally different things. Right? So that's from there we can see that yes, it's from this baby Ian that he eats, he drinks, and then he exercises, he sleeps, and then he slowly grow, and then he became a Ian today, right? And he continued to grow, and one day he'll become an old Ian. So that shows that he is not a fixed, this Ian is not a fixed Ian, but rather it is causes and conditions. its many causes and conditions. Therefore, he can develop and he can grow taller and taller. Now, if that baby Ian is a fixed identity that can't be changed, then how can he grow? His bone can grow taller, longer. It's because it is causes and conditions. It can absorb new nutrition, and then it slowly grow. If that baby Ian is a fixed identity, then whatever he eats will not be absorbed as well. He will be just as such, and he do not need to eat, in fact, because he's permanent. Right? So from this, first the Buddha said, if we can look at this, then we'll be able to understand that this Ian and that Ian, they are actually not one Ian, but at the same time they are not totally different. Alright? So that is the first thing that we have to understand. Secondly is that that this Ian and that Ian is we cannot say that this Ian is and that Ian they are permanent themselves, or we can't say that they are connected or disconnected. They grow from one to another, so it's not, and it goes through a lot of process and a lot of causes and conditions. So they do have a bit of links together. But then you can't say that. So therefore, we can't say that this Ian is permanent and disconnected, because it is causes and conditions that keep on changing that leads to the new Ian, right? So all this shows about causes and conditions and changing. So it's just like sometimes we look at the cloud on the sky. If you just look, you see that sometimes this cloud is here, and then with the wind blow, and it starts to change to another shape. And you can't say that, okay, this new picture that you're taking is totally disconnected from the previous picture that you take, because it is the water vapor with the wind, and it start to change to another shape. Does it make sense? All right. So, and also you can't say that this baby Ian has ceased, and then the new baby Ian has arisen. The older Ian has arisen, because the baby Ian. So sometimes when we look at things, we always say rising and falling. So we say the baby Ian has fallen, the new Ian has arisen. It looks like they are disconnected. Now, when we talk about rising and falling of certain phenomena, it's because when we look at a certain phenomena, for example, we have a tree, all right? We have a tree, and then when the tree dies, we say, oh, it has died. But the dying, and then when it dies, and then you find that there's another new shoot that shoots up because of the seeds that fall down, or maybe one of the roots still alive and it starts to shoot up again. Then we say, oh, a new tree branches, a new tree grow. And we start to say the old tree has died, the new tree has grown. But in fact, are they totally disconnected? They are not. Alright? So we have to understand that the baby itself and the older Ian, we cannot say that they are rising or falling, because when we say something arise and something fall, is we start to cling on to them as a fixed identity. When we say this is A disappear. But if A itself is causes and conditions, doesn't have a fixed identity, they are all just in the process of changing, then what is rising and what is falling? In fact, there's nothing that it's just the phenomena that has changed, and then it's changed to a new phenomena. Does it make sense? So it's just like the crowd that we say, that the crowd on this end, initially you may be taking your photo, and if it's having a camera shooting, this picture looks very beautiful, and then the wind starts to blow and it starts to change to another one, you say, oh, this one has gone, and then that one arrives. But in fact, when we say something gone, we start to think of that an identity, and it dies off. But if we understand that in fact it is just when we cling on to the identity, we are actually clinging on to the appearance of the phenomena only. It is not the fixed the real nature of the thing. Is it very confusing? No. So when we say something is rising and falling, we usually say when something is rise and fall, it's because we start to see this phenomena itself as a fixed identity. So when this phenomena changes, we say it has gone. But when you start to understand that this phenomena itself is a combination of many causes and conditions, there's no fixed identity, and it just keeps on changing. Even at the time when you see as a picture A, it itself, there's no fixed identity. So since there's no fixed identity, and it is always in the process of changing, then how can we say that it has gone? What has gone? So sometimes I say it is more like a puzzle. Okay, for example, we put a few pieces of things together and make a picture of the puzzle. And then we move away some and we substitute something in there. And then and then finally we substitute the whole thing with and ends up to become a new picture. We say the first picture has gone and now the second picture arrives. But in fact, if we are still in the process of substituting and changing, then in fact the when we keep on doing the substituting and changing, putting new puzzles, and this process never ends, then when it comes out to a first picture, it's just temporarily as well, because we keep on still taking out puzzles and putting in new puzzles, and it just moves on. So if that is the case, how can you say that something has arisen and something has ceased? Does it make sense? Alright, so that's how we have to understand the teaching of causes and conditions, which says that everything comes together with causes and conditions, and they are all in the process of changing. So the reason why we fall into the trap of saying something arise and something fall is because we cling on to the phenomena as an identity, and then we say that has gone. But then usually when the Buddha teach us how to observe the phenomena, he start with teaching us to observe rising and falling, because we can't even see the rising and falling. We tend to attach to things as it is. So the Buddha tells us, look, these things arise and it change, so don't attach to it. Alright, so that is the first stage how the Buddha teaches. If a person can understand rising and falling, then the Buddha then go on to tell the person, look, now the things that you see that is rising and falling, what is rising and what is falling? If you look at the things that you thought is rising, if it doesn't have a fixed identity, then how can you say it arises? Then you can't say it arises anymore, because there's no fixed identity. When you say something it arises, there's a it. There's a thing that they pop out and then disappear. But if this phenomenon that pop out itself doesn't have fixed identity, it's just in the process of changing with causes and conditions, then you really can't say what has arises and what has ceased. Does it make sense? Right. So usually we become attached to certain phenomena when a certain phenomena is more distinct. Just like, for example, all of you are studying. Now, every day you are studying, and then come to a certain end of semester, you have a certain result, and then you go on. Now, in fact, that period when you have your exams and you got a certain result, you say, okay, first semester has ended. But in fact, if you look at it, it's we ourselves who draw a line to say, okay, this is the exam time, and then, okay, it has ended. But if you think about it throughout your life of study, it just go on, it just move on. It's just that if you don't draw the line, it just go on by as such. And so there's actually no... It's not necessary for you to say, okay, this first semester has ended, or second semester has arisen. It's we ourselves who name it for convenience of communication. Otherwise, your life of study, in terms of what you need to study or how you want to develop yourself, you develop your knowledge, will be just keep on going. And it's not necessary for you to say my knowledge has arises, my knowledge has fall, isn't it? So it just keep on going, and it's just basically causes and conditions. So that's how the Buddha teaches us how we can try to observe the phenomena around us, and then from there we can then go into a bit in depth into understand what does mean by dependent origination. So by looking at people around us, looking at your own pictures, how you change. How can we change? If I'm fixed, how can I change? And then, it allow us to understand the teaching of causes and conditions better. Now, so, but then some people may say, okay, everything arises due to causes and conditions. So as long as you put some causes and conditions together, then you should come up with something. So if I put some bricks together, then it should end up to be a paddy field. It doesn't work that way, right? So there are some principles that the law of causes and conditions follow as well. So first is that we have to understand that when there's a result, there's an effect, there must be a cause, all right? So there must be causes that lead to the arising of certain effects. So that's the first thing that we need to understand. And then secondly is that the causes and conditions in this web of causes and conditions that we are trying to create so that we can create our future, it also follows the law of cause and effect. Right? So remember the teaching of dependent origination, sometimes we say the law of causes and conditions, which is a bit easier to understand. So everything arises due to causes and conditions. They are dependent originated. Alright, so now we are trying to so we do not just sit down here and wait for causes and conditions to come by itself. We can, in Buddhism we say that we can create the causes and conditions. And that's why we say that our life is in our own hand. So, but then how can we create the causes and conditions that lead to happiness? That's where the teaching of cause and effect has to come in. So, the causes and in our life, there are many causes and conditions. Alright? So, we are trying to put the causes and conditions together so it gears towards a certain direction that we want. How can we make sure that they gear to the direction that we want? So we have to understand the teaching of cause and effect. So there is natural, and this we have to understand that this teaching of causes and conditions, or teaching of cause and effect, are not created by the Buddha. The Buddha realized this truth when he attained enlightenment. Through his profound his calmness and focus of mind, his profound mental power and refined mind, that he saw how this universe works. So he saw how everything arises through causes and conditions, and they flow according to the teaching of the law of cause and effect. So if we can understand this, then we can make sure that we provide the causes and conditions that according to the teaching of cause and effect, that then gear ourselves to the right direction. Alright? So so that is the second thing that we have to understand. So the teaching of cause and effect basically tells us that if we cultivate wholesome deeds, then we will reap ourselves to happiness. So there won't be such thing as you steal and rob and you will have happiness. So that is not there's no such cause and effect. Okay? So just like someone when someone is born, they will die. So that is this is the natural law of cause and effect. So this law of cause and effect was not created by the Buddha, but rather he just through his observation he realized this truth. And then the third thing about the teaching of law of dependent origination is that that all these causes and conditions are possible to be created by us, they can subject to change if we find that certain causes and conditions are not right, and we want to supply it with the new causes and conditions. We can still do that and change ourselves, and that's why there are always rooms for improvement. See, so, and this is possible because they don't have a fixed identity. So it's lucky that they don't have a fixed identity. So if it's not right, okay, we can take out some conditions and put in some right conditions. So that basically means this is what we meant by that causes and conditions and changes can take place because they are empty in nature. So empty in nature, or emptiness in Buddhism, basically means that they do not have a fixed identity. It doesn't mean hollow, but it just means that everything that we existence that we see, they do not have a fixed identity. They can be changed with the causes and conditions, and they are all in the process of changing. So we say that they are empty in nature. So they do not have a fixed identity. So do not misunderstand emptiness as nothing at all. Alright? So it's just that we have a Dharma class here. We say this Dharma class is empty in nature as well, because the Dharma class itself relies on many causes and conditions to make it happen. You need to have the speaker, you need to have the audience, you need to have the room, and everyone come at the right same time and same day. Then we have a Dharma class here. And every moment from just now, 7 o'clock until now, everything that we say is different. Whatever in your mind is different as well. And time is passing by. And then afterwards at 9 o'clock, then everyone is going to go home. So where is the fixed nature of the Dharma class? And that's what happened in our life as well. That this body and mind that we have is combination of many causes and conditions, it just keep on changing. But when it is applicable, it does have the effect of helping the others and helping ourselves. Okay, so that is the meaning of emptiness in Buddhism, which means that everything arises due to causes and conditions. They are in the process of changing, and so because they don't have a fixed identity, so therefore, therefore we can always change the conditions and follow the flow of causes and cause and effect, and then try to create the futures that we want. So these are the three principles that we have to understand about law of the law of dependent origination. Is it still very confusing? Is it okay now? All right. So So it is by realizing this truth that the Buddha realized how sentient beings caught themselves in suffering. Sentient beings cannot see the truth of dependent origination themselves clearly and wrongly attached to themselves and phenomena. They develop strong self-centeredness and lead to a lot of greed, hatred, jealousy, and so on. And then this also lead them to cycle of life and death, because they cling on to themselves as an I, and when they want, they are about at the blink of death, they long for continuous existence. So when you long for continuous existence, you will accumulate causes and conditions that allow you to look for a new life. And so therefore you go on. So ignorance and desire lead us to the new life. Alright, so dependent origination basically tell us about this principle. And a lot of times we also talk about dependent origination in how to explain that, in explaining how we lead ourselves from one life to another. It is dependent originated as well. Some people like to ask, where do we come about? How are we being reborn again and again? It is we ourselves who look for the rebirth. Some people always, how can we attain enlightenment? But then our habit, whatever we are doing, whatever is in our mind, is that we love our life so much. We crave for continuous existence. We do not want to die. And we do not actually look for liberation, because when we say don't attach, let go, understand that it's not necessary to attach, we feel, oh no, I need to cling on. We feel like if I let go things, you feel insecure. And so therefore, of course, you cling on to all the things in this world, you cling on to yourself, and so all these conditions will lead you to a new rebirth, because you're not letting go this world. Now, we have to also understand that when we say that we want to attain liberation, sometimes we say letting go of this world, it's not saying that you're going to leave this world and go to another place, or where are you going to be at Nirvana. Basically, when we say letting go, is to basically to see the truth of ourselves and understand that this self is not necessary to cling on to. Now, when you do not cling on to yourself, when you realize the truth of non-attachment, it doesn't mean that you need to die immediately. There are a lot of arahats. The Buddha, when he attained enlightenment, he actually understand the truth of non-self. So he do not attach to himself, but then he used this physical body that he has in helping and guiding the others. And so because he didn't attach to himself, he do not have self-centeredness, self-arrogance, greed, hatred, and so on. So he was just thinking, using his wisdom, using this body as a tool to help and guide others with a mind of equanimity. So some people always think that when you attend Nirvana, you have to die. And they say, I don't want to die as yet. Or so if you have that thought, you're not going to attend Nirvana. Because Nirvana basically is a state where you realize the truth of non-self, and it's the state of peace and ease. Okay, so it is a bit profound. Alright, so now let's come back to the dependent origination of the 12 links of dependent origination. Have you all talked about that before? Alright, so the 12 links basically explain how we go around the cycle of life and death. Alright, so because of our ignorance and our desire, we create a lot of unwholesome karma, unwholesome actions, speech and thought, and then at the blink of our death, we still look for new life. So that's why in the sutra it always says that when this exists, that comes to be, with the arising of this, that arises, and that is with ignorance as condition, volitional actions comes to be. So because of ignorance, we start to take actions to do wrong things, with self-attachment, with self-perspective. And then with these actions, with self-perspective as a consciousness comes to be, and then it leads on. So the 12 links are basically first is ignorance, and then it leads on to okay, I'll write down all of them first. And with consciousness we have form. So this is what we call the 12 links of dependent origination, which explains how we go around the rebirth again and again. Right, so basically what we are now is that we have a body, this body that we have, okay? So the form basically means the body and mind that we have, and we have the six sense organs, six senses. And when we have six senses, we have contact with the external environment. When we have contact with external environment, and then immediately we have light and dislike, nice feelings and not nice feelings. And when we have these feelings, a lot of time we don't say, what is this feeling? What is the truth of this feeling? Where does feelings come about? We never thought of that. We say, I do not like this, I like this. So immediately we have desires of light and dislike. And then with that desire, we start to cling on to, cling or attach to whatever we have. And then with that here, clinging to an attachment, then you find that it develops a lot of unwholesome thoughts in ourselves of greed, hatred, jealousy, arrogance, and so on. All this will all come in. And then with this, so you find that with this desire, attachment, these are basically in our present life, okay? So these are actions in our present life that so these are in our present life. So now the existence, this becoming, what does it mean? It means that in our present life, with this desire, clinging, attachment, and all this action that we have done, we accumulate the conditions for future existence. Because we are creating the karma that, because you see, in this life, if we cling on to this, cling on to that, everything in this world are so nice to us and we really like them to be ours, and we love to be in this world so much, then of course, when we are at the brink of death, we are not ready to let go as yet. So this will actually plant the seed, accumulate the resources for future existence. Okay? And so the resources for future existence, when we die, of course it will lead on to new rebirth, and then this is the next part. Okay, so basically we say that
So it leads to new rebirth, and then again, this is just another new life that you're going to go through. And how do we come to about to this particular life? Now, this ignorance, volition, action, we say it's the past causes. So, okay, say when someone dies, all right, and then we, because of we still have not attained enlightenment, we still have ignorance about ourselves, ignorance about the world that we're living in, ignorance about all the things that around us. So we have a lot of attachment, and when we are at the brink of death, we still crave for continuous existence. We have love for life. And so because of our craving for continuous existence, not understanding the truth, and we attach to whatever we have, including ourselves so much, these are what we call ignorance, it becomes a motivational force. So it becomes a force that you really want to look for a new life. When we look at a lot of people when they're about to die, you find that they are reluctant to go. So of course they will look for a new rebirth. And then plus, this is what sometimes we call the karma. So karma will be more like the fuel. So with ignorance as the motivational force, all right. So you got the karma, which are like the fuel or the material support. Okay, so the karma, so when someone is looking for a new life, but then it doesn't mean that okay, I'm looking for a new life, I hope that next life I can be reborn as a wiser person, a person who is more beautiful, rich, and so on, then you will be able to fulfill what you want. It doesn't mean that, because then your karma will decide. You have this wish to be reborn, but what type of person will you be reborn to, then doesn't go according to your wish then, because it depends on what kind of karma you have created for yourself. See? So with ignorance and karma, so all these conditions, then it looks for a new rebirth. Okay? So look for the right conditions that allows you to be reborn, and then you will put the conditions together, and that's where consciousness starts. So in Buddhism we say that when the mom and the dad, the sperm and the eggs meet, when they fertilize, that's when the consciousness get in. The consciousness starts to develop, and that's the starting of life in Buddhism. So when someone say, if someone have a abortion or something, is it a killing? Yes, it is a killing in Buddhism, because when the egg is fertilized, that's when life starts, because consciousness get in, and with that consciousness support, that's how the egg can continue to grow and then start to form in, become bigger and bigger, and then slowly you have the sense organs start to develop and absorb nutrition. Without consciousness in it, the sperm and the egg you wouldn't be able to grow, and you wouldn't develop. Right? So it is this consciousness to get in, and so this is what we call it's the past cause. This part is actually the past causes. And then it leads to here to here is what we call the present effect. So from the past causes, ignorance and karma, we look for a new rebirth, and then we start to have a body. Can you see it? Okay. So we start to have a body, and then in the present life, we start to commit actions, speech and thought. And so from here to here, sorry, it's a bit messy. From desire to existence is what we call the present causes. So we're cultivating present causes that lead to future effects. Yes, we're going to talk about that. How are we going to stop? You have to find the turning point. Right. So ignorance and karma are past causes. Look for new rebirth. So then then when the conditions are right, consciousness develops, and then form the body and mind. And then you got six sense organs, the contact, sensation, and this is the present effect. So with that past causes, looking for a new body, a new life, and this is the new life that's been born. Okay? So this new life that's been born with sense organs and so on, then we start to have contact with external environment, and then we start to have desire, clinging, attachment, and then we cultivate causes for future rebirth. Unless you start to cultivate practices that tell yourself not to cling, but look forward towards liberation. Okay, so that's the present causes. So if we do clinging, attachment, and so on, then it leads to the fusion effect of birth, OH, death, again and again. Does that make sense? Okay, so that shows from the past to the present and then to the future, and then it's just a circle that we keep on going if we do break this link. And that's what we say, it's the 12 links of dependent origination. So our rebirth is dependent originated because of ignorance, so therefore we create wrong actions, and because of these causes, then we lead to the present life, and because in the present life we continue to do wrong causes, then we lead to the future rebirth. Alright, so since it's dependent originated, so we can shuffle some of the causes and conditions so that we can end the cycle. Right? So how can we, which is the point that we can tackle? Where is the important point for us to tackle? It's all different.
So many answers.
Well, ignorance was already from the past. So we are already born here. We are already ignorant. Clinging? Now, the part at clinging. When you start to have clinging, yes, if you want to stop, you can, but it's not very easy because when you start to have developed strong clinging attachment to things, and ask you to, if we say, okay, stop, don't cling on to that anymore. But of course, if we can develop wisdom, then maybe we can overcome it. But when you come to this stage, it becomes a strong habit, and it's not that easy.
Sensation to desire.
So when you have feelings, you have to start to contemplate. All right, what is this feeling about? Nice feeling, uncomfortable feeling. All right. So you need to contemplate. So this at this point, if you can contemplate according to the teachings, maybe you can. You can stop the link, right? But according to the sutra, a more critical point is if you can stop here, it will be much easier, all right? So when you have contact, of course we have contact, and you have, so when you have contact, when you have feelings, but so when you have contact, immediately contact with exam, how can I have this contact, and that instead of having
feeling of like and dislike, okay, it's a touch, all right? It's a touch. What is the thing that's touching the table? And then we start to see, how can I have these feelings of the touch instead of going into the judgment of, oh, this is soft, this is smooth, right? So before you go into that, just know that it's a touch. Just like when you practice, sometimes when we practice vipassana or when you contemplate on the sensation of your body, you just know that there's a feeling. We don't want to go into whether it's a nice or not nice feeling. Alright? So of course, now in fact this process goes very fast. So, but if you are unable to observe this with your wisdom, then at least at this point, so these two points are important points, alright? Because when you start to go into desire and clinging, you find that it just go in, and it's difficult to get out, alright? But when you have contact and maybe a sensation, it's still workable, alright? So these two other points. So when you are able to observe or contemplate according to the teachings at this point and make sure that you don't carry on, then, so instead of having desire, clinging, and cultivating the causes and conditions for continuous existence, we start to understand that everything arises due to causes and conditions. They are impermanent. It's not necessary to have desire. When you have no desire, then there will be no clinging. When there's no clinging, there will be conditions for future existence. Okay? So so that's the dependent, the teaching of the dependent origination, and it basically shows us that it arises due to the causes and conditions, and if we can, we know to change the causes and conditions, then we'll be able to reverse this loop. So that, so if we look at backward, well, we have, how do we have old age and death? It's because we are born, right? So why are we being born? It's because we have created causes and conditions for ourselves to be reborn. And how do we create the causes and conditions to be reborn? It's because in our life we attach to a lot of things, we don't see things clearly, we are carried away by our ignorance, so therefore we have a lot of attachment, and we created a lot of karma that leads to rebirth. So if we do not attach, so that's how we say we go backwards, so it's because of this clinging. And then how do clinging come about? It's because we have desire. Right? So how does desire come about? It's because we have sensation. How do we have sensation? It's because we have sense, we have contact. And how do we have contact? It's because we have sense organs. Right? So backwards you find that how does six sense organs come about? It's because this baby embryo start to grow and grow, and so you got the name and form. And how this body comes about is because of the consciousness that get in and allow the embryo to grow. And how does this small life comes about is because of our karma and causes and conditions. So our karma and ignorance. So if we can understand that we want to reverse the cycle of life and death, then if there's no ignorance, then there won't be karma. If there's no karma, then there won't be all these things that's going to follow. Okay? So, but in this present life that we are in, then we have to tackle this and try to develop wisdom so that we can overcome the ignorance. So, because if we can tackle this with wisdom, then we are not cultivating this and this. Because if at this point you always observe and contemplate according to the teachings of the Buddha,
develop wisdom, it is wisdom that breaks through ignorance. Alright? So it's with wisdom, and then we don't create unwholesome karma of self attachment and desire, then you are not creating the causes for future existence, which is this, then you'll be able to end the cycle of life and death. Okay? So that's how the Buddha explained to us the 12 links of dependent origination. Now, so how can we practice so that we can make sure that we are very mindful and alert when we have contact? Or when you have contact, don't jump immediately into, I like this cloth. So how can we make sure that we develop mindfulness and make sure that we contemplate according to the teachings? So the Buddha teach us, first, of course, he tells us the Four Noble Truths. You have talked about the Four Noble Truths. Alright? So he tells us about the Four Noble Truths and then the practice of the Noble Eightfold Path. Now, the practice of the Noble Eightfold Path is actually the teaching of dependent origination in action. So, when we say the teaching of dependent origination, in fact, it is sometimes also called the teaching of the middle path. We always think of middle path as the Noble Eightfold Path, but middle path refers to the teachings of dependent origination as well as the teaching of the Noble Eightfold Path. Because the teaching of dependent origination that we said just then try to tell us not to fall into the two extreme of attaching to thing as permanent. Or some people say, okay, so if you don't say a permanent, okay, everything is just empty, nothing at all. But then the dependent origination is telling us that everything arises due to causes and conditions. They are all in the process of changing. They do not have fixed identity. So it's not void altogether, but at the same time, they are not permanent. So in a lot of practices, especially during Buddha's time, there are people who tend to think, okay, there is a permanent soul. Or some find that they can't understand a permanent soul, they can't find a permanent soul, then they say, when someone dies, they extinct, no more, nothing at all. So, but then the Buddha want to try to overcome this problem of, because when you say there's a permanent soul, then there is a clinging to a fixed identity. When you say that something go extinct altogether, in fact, in the mind of the person, there's still a fixed identity that has gone, which is still not the right teachings. So to overcome this, the Buddha tells us dependent origination. So that is to tell us not to fall into the trap of permanent and not to fall into the trap of extinction. But everything is just causes and conditions, does not have a fixed identity, but they are not void altogether. This is a bit difficult, but try to relate to this teaching or think about it again and again, or look up, read up more books on this. So the teaching of dependent origination is also the teaching of the middle path. Alright, so now let's talk about how we can overcome this problem. So the Noble Eightfold Path basically tells us to have right understanding. So right understanding on this teaching of dependent origination, teachings of impermanence, teaching of cause and effect. Alright, so bear that in mind, understand that everything arises due to causes and conditions. They are all in the process of changing. So when we attach to things, we say, oh, how does this feeling comes about? When we say, I like, I dislike, why do I have this like and dislike? Where does that feeling comes about? So it is actually because of our sense organs' contact with the external environment
and then transmission of information to our brain, and then we start to make decision, yes, I want this. So which part of ourselves wants this cloth? It is actually a transmission of many, it's actually a link of many causes and conditions. So if we can contemplate as such, then we'll be able to understand that what am I clinging onto? Who is clinging onto? Which part of me wants these things? So if we can contemplate as such, then you help us to understand things better. So first is right understanding. With that right understanding, we need to set a determination in ourselves that we want to always bear in mind the teachings, not to harbor ourselves greed, hatred, arrogance, selfishness, self-centeredness, and so on, because all these self-perspective and wholesome elements will carry us away, that we will not be able to see the truth. So always have this determination not to allow greed, hatred, ignorance to carry us away, but bear in mind the right understanding, and then transform this into our speech, action, and thought. So make sure that we have right speech, right action, in accordance to the Buddha's teaching. Alright, so and engage in right occupation. So basically, right action tell us not to kill, not to steal, not to have sexual misconduct. So all this reflect the desire within ourselves. And then so right speech tell us to be to make sure that we do not tell lies, do not use harsh languages, do not gossip bad by others, do not gossip unnecessarily. All right so basically, when we bad bite, it shows a mind of harming the others. Again, it's protecting oneself and another, or try to get more things for ourselves. And when you tell lies, why do we tell lies? To cover our own mistake, because we feel shy. So it's arrogance. And when we tell lies, sometimes because we want to get more benefit for ourselves, it's greed. And bad bite others, that's harming the others. Either talk, basically talking nonsense, talking not nonsense, things which are meaningless about the movie star, some people's private life, and so on. So all these are not necessary, and especially we say that everything actually doesn't have a fixed identity, and we want to try to understand things more clearly. And we start to gossip about other people's private life, which are just rumors that we don't even know whether it's true or not. So even things that we want to learn, we want to try to understand, we can't understand, and we try to believe in the rumors and think of the rumors as true, that is just not necessary. Right action, right speech, right livelihood, that means engage in right occupation. So we have to make sure that we engage in the right occupation in accordance to the teaching of cause and effect, so that we don't put ourselves into doing unwholesome things every day and go home and feel remorse. And then we need to have right effort. So the Noble Eightfold Path is basically right understanding, right determination, right speech, right action, right livelihood, and then right effort. So in order to always bring our mind back to the teachings, make sure that we don't get carried away by our greed, hatred, and ignorance, we need to actually bring up our diligence and effort, because otherwise you find that we can get carried away by our habits a lot of time. So we need to have this effort in reminding ourselves the bad thoughts that we have. If they already arisen, we have to stop them. Or bad action, bad speech that we have, we need to stop them. If they haven't arisen, but already sort of start to agitate you, you need to stop them from arising. So sometimes you feel like you want to swear at someone. The words has come to your throat. You have to stop it and make sure that you don't throw it out. Okay. Right And then right effort also so besides reframing our unwholesome speech, actions and thoughts from arising, and also stop the unwholesome speech, actions and thoughts that has already arisen, we have to stop it. Alright, so maybe you have already started to swear at someone, alright, first statement has gone. Alright, but you have to make sure that the second sentence don't come out. Alright, so that is also an effort to stop. And then the third is that we have to put in effort to try to encourage ourselves to do more good deed to develop better mind. Alright, so for example, for example practicing meditation, maybe 10 minutes is okay for you, but when it comes to 15 minutes you start to feel restless, your mind is unsettled. So you have to tell yourself, okay, now I need to put in effort to develop it further. So that's also an effort that's needed. So don't just take for granted, today is not good, just see tomorrow if tomorrow is better. If you don't, because we have to understand, we do have a lot of bad habits in ourselves, not necessarily evil, but some habits which are not conducive to practice, and we need effort to correct ourselves. We may feel impatient in sitting down here, but then we have to tell ourselves, if I can't even be patient for a little while, how can I talk about enlightenment? Right? So, and why am I feeling restless? Why do we feel restless? Why do we feel impatient? Because we feel like going out to do something. Sitting down here is very uncomfortable. That is because of our body contact. We want some more comfortable feeling. We feel like sitting for too long. I need to stretch myself. I think I want to go out and stretch myself, and it's a bit too stuffy here. I want to go out to have fresh air. So again, it's to make ourselves comfortable. So therefore, when we feel like, but these days, sometimes people have a lot of excuses or reasons to justify themselves. The more we always find excuses to justify ourselves, we have to be very careful. Because sometimes we are just justifying our own habits. In terms of cultivation and practice, it may not be right. If you look at the monks who try to practice diligently, they practice in the forest. With all the rain and wind, you have to learn to understand that these are external. What we want is to tame our mind. But we have allowed our life to go in the direction of asking the environment to suit to our desire. And so therefore we always have a lot of complaints. And then we think that this is our right. So sometimes when we, because in these days people respect individuals' rights much more, and then indirectly it also helps us to strengthen our ego. I'm not saying that we should not be given any right, but we need to, as a practitioner, we need to appreciate the right that's given to us, but then at the same time be very careful, do not allow our self-arrogance to grow, our self-centeredness to grow, and become so self-protective. Right? We appreciate the right that's given to us, but we need to learn to be modest, and then also understand what do we mean by desire? What do we actually need? So when we request a lot, say, well, this is my right, I should request for this, and everyone is entitled for this, why don't I apply for this as well? But do we really need that? For example, Centrelink has got a lot of social welfare fund for a lot of for some people who are in need. There are people who are not really in need, but they feel that I think I'm entitled for that. Then they try to make false application and get what they want. This is greed, alright? So there's a lot of entitlement But sometimes if we do not need it, then it's not necessary that you must get it, right? So that's something that these are also what we need to remember when we talk about right effort. So right effort, the effort that we have to put in to develop more wholesomeness in ourselves, and the effort that we need to put in to maintain the wholesomeness that we have. Sometimes you do already have a wholesome mind, you do have compassion to the others, you are pretty good in practicing generosity and so on. You need to maintain these good habits that you have, because sometimes there are people who initially are pretty generous or like to share, but then as they start to see their friends are not doing that, they also change themselves. Sometimes you see kids, young kids, initially when they come to the class, they don't mind sharing things with friends. And then as they start to see their good friends do not like to share with others, they learn that as well, and then they discard their own good behavior. They say, oh, so-and-so do not like to lend the rubber to her, I'm not going to lend it to her as well. So, but you are not young kids, so you should be able to make justification yourself. So, so the noble eightfold path, so we have right effort, and then when you are able to develop this effort of making sure that you're doing the right thing and not the wrong thing, then you find that you can, your mind starts to stay on the teaching. So that's right mindfulness. So bear in mind the right understanding as a guide, and always use the right understanding as a guide in making, in doing, in whatever we are doing. And your mind is not so scattered, because you don't gossip around, because you talk about right speech and so on. So you see that your actions, your speech are everything on the right track, then your mind is easier to settle, right? So we have right mindfulness, and then with right mindfulness, then we can start to practice right, we can then go on to practice right meditation. So with the meditation, it helps us to calm our mind, develop our mind, which is calm and focused. Then we'll be able to transform the right understanding that we have into real wisdom. So as what we have said today about this dependent origination, some of it is pretty profound, which is not very easy to understand, because we tend to think of, oh, what is missing? You see, when we start to have this thought, what is missing? We have a concept of a fixed identity. It's very easy for us to fall into that trap. So with that, when we always, if we can relate to these teachings all the time in our life, and even through our speech, actions and thoughts, when you start to practice meditation, when your mind is really calm and peaceful, when you start to think about impermanence, causes and conditions, because when you start to practice meditation, you focus on your breathing, you let go all noise, let go all thoughts, finally you find that you actually minimize your self-centeredness. So when your self-centeredness is being minimized, you'll be able to see, understand things clearer. When we have a very strong self-centeredness, a self-perspective, whatever we see, what does it mean to me? So whatever we see, there's always an I. When there's always an I, it's just like a big ball that blocks our view. We can't see things clearly. But when you minimize your I, then you'll be able to see things much clearer with a wider scope. So with meditation, when we start to subside our self-centeredness, because your mind becomes focused on the breathing, you let go of yourself, you let go of yourself, let go of all the noise, let go of all the thoughts and so on, and just focus on the breathing in and breathing out, so the self-centeredness is being subside, then when your mind becomes very, very focused, you'll find that you'll be able to understand the things much, much easier, much, much clearer. So that is the Noble Eightfold Path. Now the Noble Eightfold Path is also correspond to the law of dependent origination. You may say, how can the Noble Eightfold Path correspond to the teaching of law of dependent to the law of dependent origination and the teaching of emptiness? Do you think it corresponds to that? Now, we have to understand that practice also relies on the coming together of many causes and conditions. Now, the Buddha has once in the Majjhima Agama, he had tell a story. King's Prasanaji, he was traveling from Sravasti to Saketa. It was a long journey, but he need to get there quickly, just like express courier. So how are they going to do this? And some of you may watch some movie or the olden days shows before, where in the past people send letters through by horse and so on. Now they do have express sometimes. So this Prasanaji need to get to a town quickly. So what he did was that it was a long journey, but he set station along the way. So when he come to each station, he changed a new cart, a new horse. And so he then managed to get from Sravasti to Saketa within one day. Because at every station, he changed a new cart and new horse. So it is the cooperative effort of many carts and many horses that he finally able to reach the destination. Now, same thing with our practice. It's just like a similar journey. From time to time, from the time that we begin to the time that we finally attain enlightenment, we do not rely on one Dharma alone. That's why we have right understanding, right thoughts, right speech, right actions. And then sometimes we do meditation, sometimes we listen to talks, sometimes we do some practice ourselves, sometimes we practice generosity. All this helps us to develop understanding. You are not just using one method, right? So we must rely on the cooperation of many dharmas and many causes and conditions. So since all these methods depend on the coincidence of many causes and conditions, and then slowly with all these practices together, they help us to develop our wisdom. So in other words, our wisdom, the development of wisdom are dependent originated as well. So practice itself are dependent originated. And then, as we say, the three principle of the dependent origination just then, that it says that everything is empty in nature. So we also have to understand Dharma itself are dependent originated. They are empty in nature. Because sometimes people let go of everything, they cling on to Dharma. We have to understand that when the Buddha teach, he teach according to causes and conditions. What kind of teaching you need that suits you, he teach that kind of teaching, right? So the teaching is to help you to develop your wisdom. When you attend that wisdom, you understand the truth, then you have to understand that the tool that the Buddha helped give you is just a tool. And that's why there's a saying that says that like when a person who wants to cross a river, he make a raft to cross the river. After he crossed the river, he feel that this raft has helped me so much. So he do not want to let go of the raft. He carry the raft on his back and walk. So the Buddha says, the teaching that I give you is the same. Whatever I give you is actually empty in nature. It's to help you to develop the wisdom. Once you realize the truth, you have to let go of this Dharma as well. If attached to it as real and do not want to let go, you cannot attain the real enlightenment. Does that make sense? So our practice is dependent originated. So there's a saying that in this Sata Sutra, it says that we first rely on cultivating wholesome deeds to get rid of our bad habits and unwholesomeness. Alright? So he said we cultivate merits in order to get rid of afflictions. And then next, so once you have get rid of all afflictions and develop merits, if you cling on to merits and say, I have a lot of merits, so there's a lot of attachment. This I is still having a lot of merits, like the merit is countable, then you're not going to get yourself anywhere. It may be a very fortunate person because of the merits they've cultivated, but you're not going to free yourself from entanglement in the cycle of life and death, because you still have an I, you still cling on to the merits that you have cultivated. So the sutra says we should first rely on merits in order to get rid of afflictions. Next, we should rely on equanimity to let go of the merits. You have to understand that marriage itself are causes and conditions. They are empty in nature. Then we can attain the state of nirvana. Does it make sense? Okay. So, so that's how the Buddha used example to tell us. So he said, marriage is like a hot burning old coin. So if people like marriage, cultivate marriage, and feel like with marriage, then I'll be a more fortunate person in the future. My career can run smoothly. I will be a rich person. I'll be a beautiful and handsome person, and so on. But the Buddha said, marriage is like a hot burning old coin. Though it is valuable, it is untouchable. So it is by letting go, understand that this marriage itself is also causes and. So first we cultivate marriage so that we don't fall into the unwholesome realm, so that our life is conducive. But then we need to bear in mind it is just tools for us, so that we can continue to practice. And so finally we have to learn to let it go, then only you can attain real liberation. So all this basically teach us that about dependent origination and emptiness. Does it make sense? Okay, so I think the last two stories probably make better sense to you, and so bear in mind, marriage. Don't misunderstand. Say, okay, I don't want to cultivate marriage. You cultivate marriage to help yourself and others. Like Bodhisattva likes to cultivate a lot of marriage, but they do not cling on to the marriage as their own property. It's not their sole property. They cultivate marriage so that they become a fortunate person. They have a lot of resources, but those resources are to share with others so that it becomes tools for them to help others. So if you can cultivate marriage as such, do not cling on marriage to as your own property, but rather you want to be a person who is not too poor, who is wise, who has the intelligence, so that you can use the intelligence and your resources to help others, then that will be good, right? But finally, you also understand that this marriage itself are causes and conditions that empty in nature, that in fact not necessarily cling on. Then you will be really free and at ease. Alright, is there any question that anyone like to ask today? So when it's contact, so basically when it's contact, then we know that where does this contact come about? So it's the sense organs with our external environment, and then with the consciousness. So therefore, we develop this contact. Yeah. So then you see, you understand this contact is not a fixed identity, but rather it's a combination of many causes and conditions that lead to the contact. Yeah. So you see as a phenomena rather than going into judgment of good or bad. Because when you start to have good and bad, it's a personal view already. It's just like when we so if you just treat it as like if you're doing something, a task not something that you like, for example an engineer when they go to a bridge and analyze something. So if you look at things as such rather than putting yourself into there, but just analyze how does this the mechanism or the of it, rather than putting yourself emotion sentiment into that, of because like and dislike basically is a personal feelings already. So but if we just look at it as okay, how does this machine work? Yeah, that's right. So basically we just see how the process happens. Okay, is there any other questions? a lot of things to go home and think about. Challenging. So I hope it does that it could be I hope that there's something that sink into your mind that you can go home and relate to it. If there's anything that you find that you can't understand, you can probably look up more books on dependent origination. Or if you feel like asking me some questions, you can probably send me an email.